Welcome to my platform, metro.co.uk's new podcast, where we speak to the authors of some of our first person and opinion section's most read articles of the past few years. My platform is all about drawing attention to underheard and underrepresented voices in the media, with guests talking about issues close to their heart. Hosted by me, Jess Austin. I edit the section of Metro that all of our lovely guests submitted their pieces to, as well as being among the most popular articles, they're also some of my absolute favourites, and I can't wait to speak to the authors more about what inspired their articles unhindered by a pesky word count. In this series, we'll be having thought-provoking discussions about issues like the pension gap, pretty privilege, and the problematic side of fake tanning. We'll also be shining a light on people's lived experience, covering mental health, HIV diagnoses, and finding love after loss. This week, we're welcoming Nick Summerfield to the podcast. Nick is a supporter of worldwide cancer research, and today we're going to be discussing his story, which he shared with metro.co.uk in an article called "I Thought I'd Just Eaten Too Much Rich Food. I Want You to Know Bowel Cancer Symptoms." Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. So can you start by telling me a bit about yourself, please?
Sure. So my name's Nick. I'm originally from Kent, and I've been living in London, probably just over 10 years, maybe even 12 years now.
Amazing. So we're going to be going into your story, which started around Christmas 2020. You mentioned you've been feeling a little bit off. How were you feeling?
Yeah, so I probably sort of, I got really interested in the gym, which sounds a bit weird, but I sort of realized that actually doing exercise was really good for me mentally. And I started sort of noticing the differences and sort of losing a bit of weight and putting a bit of muscle on. And sort of in conjunction with that, I realized that if you eat healthy food, that actually that works well when you're trying to do exercise. I was at home in Kent for Christmas at my parents' house and started having some bowel habit changes. Instead of in going to the toilet, I was pretty clockwork, and but then started noticing that sort of I was either having pretty bad diarrhea or constipation in one day. And I kind of put it down to the fact that it was Christmas time. I'd let my hair down, having some beers, probably eating all the good quality treats, you know, that sort of thing. And when it came into the new year, so January 2021, I started sort of realizing actually my bowel habits hadn't gone back to sort of normal. Actually, to some extent, they had got worse. I actually got a puppy sort of a few weeks before Christmas, and I was taking her out back in Kent. And I sort of realized that I think I'm going to poo myself just out of nowhere. So I had to sort of drop my trousers in the middle of a field, which was a bit demoralizing, and just have to go to the loo. Then I started noticing blood in my poo. So all happened in quite a quick space of time, to be honest. And that was the big sort of red flag of something's not right. And I don't quite know what to do about it.
Did you know that those were symptoms associated with bowel cancer, or like a lot of people in that situation want to believe that it was something else? Did you try not to catastrophize, or were you like, I need to see a doctor straight away?
So my dad had bowel cancer about 10 years ago, maybe a bit more than that. And actually my mum's also had cancer. So I felt to some extent I had some form of education on that word. I suppose the honest answer is when I saw sort of blood in my poo, I didn't necessarily think it was cancer. I kind of thought maybe, you know, a pile or something kind of fairly normal. So although I was worried, I kind of did that classic guy thing of kind of talk about it, but not actually go and see my GP about it. But I just felt, it wasn't right, because it's not normal to go to the toilet and see blood. So I did want to do something about it. But to be honest, it actually took my mum to say, like, I just think you should go and see the GP. It's probably nothing to worry about, but it will put your mind at rest.
Did you mention it in passing to your mum, or did she notice you were going to the toilet more or other symptoms? How did that discussion go?
Mum and I have got a really good relationship, and to be honest, I wear my heart on my sleeve. So I just sort of said, sort of like, there's blood in my poo. But to be honest, I think I might have said that for a good week before she said, like, just go and see the GP. I think it was probably getting worse as that week went on for me to sort of continue talking about it. But I think just because the fact that I stopped drinking the beers and the quality streets and everything else and gone back to kind of healthy eating, but my bowel habits hadn't changed. It just didn't feel right.
And when you went to the GP, what happened? What did they say?
She thought, similar to me, I guess, that it was a pile, and she had to do a quick inspection, didn't feel anything sort of untoward. And to be honest, it was almost as I was sort of walking out the door that I said, oh, Dad had bowel cancer years ago. Her initial thought process, I don't want to say that she said, we definitely don't have cancer, but given my age, it was more leaning of, well, that is unlikely. However, given your family history, let's request for you to have a colonoscopy. And to be honest, I feel if I didn't mention Dad, I wouldn't have had the colonoscopy in the first place. So, you know, I'm glad I did say that, because I think my situation would have been completely different. I guess the added challenge of when this was going on was sort of around the COVID time, and that made it difficult to have any kind of hospital consultations or any hospital appointments. So it kind of elongated the process a little bit more. But my GP, she you know, she was amazing and managed to sort of push things as quick as she could for me.
So initially your mind was put at ease because she was like, you're young and you're your early 30s. It's probably not bowel cancer. But what happened next? You had your colonoscopy, you had your bloods?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think I felt quite chilled out about it. I think I just kind of thought, well, it probably is a pile. It's probably a pile that's further up than a finger could reach. That's great if I can have a colonoscopy and hopefully it will be sorted. I had to have a quick sort of phone call with a doctor to explain my symptoms, and he agreed to agreed it was a good idea to have the colonoscopy. And it was probably a week or two later, had the procedure, which I know sounds really obvious, but the thing I probably hadn't appreciated is that when they put a camera inside you, there's a massive TV screen that you can also see showing the inside. So I just kind of wasn't prepared for that. And when they started putting the camera up, it was pretty uncomfortable, but I did. There was something glaringly obvious, sort of inside me. I think I might have even sort of swore and said, you know, what the F is that or something. I'm not sure how long the procedure went on for, but it felt like forever. And I was rushed back to I was taken back to my cubicle room. And then a different nurse came in and said, we need to take bloods from you. And a different nurse came in and said, who are you here with? And I said, well, nobody, because it's COVID, so you're not allowed to bring anybody. And then they asked me to call my parents to ask them to come and wait in the reception. So I just knew something wasn't right. I didn't know what, but I just knew something wasn't quite right. And then they said to me that the doctor wanted to see me. So I went to one of the family waiting rooms, and the doctor, she sat me down and she said that I'm 95% sure you've got cancer. She said she's taken biopsies. So until they come back, you can't give that 100% diagnosis, but she said sort of where it is, what it looks like, the size of it, she's sort of 95% sure. So, you know, that was such a shock. And then I had to sort of leave, walk into the the reception room, and find my mum, who was just sitting there, and tell her that they think it's cancer. And it was just, your life gets turned upside down in just a few words.
And how were you feeling in that moment?
It's such a weird thing to describe, because I definitely felt like just sort of frozen shock. I couldn't really think about anything, but on the same side, I was thinking about everything, sort of work, you know, the fact that I just got a dog. It was COVID times. The fact that mum and dad have both had cancer, how I tell my friends and family. And so it was sort of like almost I couldn't move, but I had everything going on in my brain at the same time. And I suppose there were so many unknowns that worried me. So I knew that the next steps were to have a CT scan, an MRI, and then wait for the biopsies to come back. So you were told this sort of bad bit of news, but part of you was a bit like, well, 5%, maybe they're wrong. Maybe I've just got this weird growth and it's not cancer. But then you think, well, actually, it's still going to have to be removed anyway. So how does that happen? So there was a lot of things rushing through my mind at the same time, which was difficult, which was really difficult.
How long did it take for the biopsy to come back?
So I was really lucky. I had the colonoscopy on a Saturday. On the Monday, I had a phone call from my bowel nurse. The Tuesday, I had a CT scan. Wednesday, I had an MRI. And then I had to wait the following week to get all the results back. And the bowel team, they all sit down to review me to then discuss the findings and also discuss a plan of attack. The weird thing for me, which sounds bizarre, my results came back and my bowel nurse said to me, we know this is cancer, but actually your results came back borderline. So I had to have something called a sigmoidoscopy, which is basically another sort of camera up the bum to take another biopsy. And then that came back positive. And then it was all systems go with a plan of attack.
That must have been a lot for you to take in, especially as when you first saw your GP, she drawn attention to your age and how unlikely it would be for you to have cancer. You were only 33 at the time. Did you, up until that point, think your age was prohibitive to you getting cancer?
Yeah, I just had that view that when you get old, that's when maybe your body deteriorates in some ways. And, you know, unfortunately, maybe that is cancer. And I never thought, you know, I've been really lucky. I've never really had to go to hospital. I've never broken a bone. You know, the only thing I kind of suffered from is like tonsillitis as sort of growing up as a kid. That's really as far as it went. So I just never thought that word cancer would have any association to me. I guess if I'm honest, ever, but certainly not in my 30s.
And so what plan of action were you given?
So I was classed as a critical cancer patient. Because of that, there was a specialist bowel hospital called St. Mark's that were working in conjunction with my local hospital to agree sort of the plan of attack. Because my tumour was massive, it basically had broken through my bowel walls and was very close to attaching itself to my bladder, that it would be a very difficult operation to remove the tumour straight away. So the plan was to try to reduce the size of the tumour first and then have an operation. And the plan was chemotherapy every day for 6 weeks. And then on top of that, radiotherapy every day for 6 weeks. So you didn't do chemotherapy or radiotherapy on weekends, but it was chemotherapy and radiotherapy sort of every day for 6 weeks. And that was a slog, to be honest. I didn't argue it. I really just had the attitude of, you tell me what you want me to do and I will do it. They did say that obviously the outcome that we want from this is that the tumor shrinks, but potentially the tumor could get bigger or the tumor could stay the same size. So there is concerns that, you know, am I going to put myself through this? And I don't quite know whether it's going to work or not. But, you know, it was, as far as I was concerned, it was all systems go. The chemotherapy that I did was actually, it was taking pills. So I took 10 pills every day, but drove to hospital every day for the radiotherapy.
Thankfully, the treatment shrunk your tumor, so you were able to have your operation.
Exactly. So really, really lucky and really pleased that the treatment plan worked. It shrunk my tumor. I had to wait, I think, roughly about 6 weeks, because when you sort of finish your treatment plan, you still have chemo and radiotherapy in you to sort of help do the job of reducing it. I got the good news that the tumor had shrunk. I guess the challenging bit on that was, because again, this was during COVID times, there was a waiting list. For me, I'd say I was lucky. It was sort of 4 to 6 months of waiting. But to be honest, I actually fortunate that I had private healthcare through work. So I actually had my operation done privately. So I didn't have to wait that long at all. And that was to remove the tumor, but I knew that I was going to have a stoma bag. And that was just to sort of let my body heal. I call it sort of being repiped. So sort of how I was repiped, it needed the stoma bag to sort of allow my body to heal.
And for those that don't know what a stoma bag is, do you mind describing it, please?
Yeah, sure. So my tumor was really low down. It was in my rectum, and they had to remove all of my rectum and then pipe me back up. But to allow my body to heal, you have a hole in your tummy where your poo comes out of into a bag. I did have some experience in that because Dad had to have a stoma bag for a while. But to be honest, I had not appreciated mentally and physically what it was like having one. I did find it quite difficult for a while.
You mentioned that when you woke up from the surgery, your body felt alien as it changed so significantly. What was that like?
I know this like sounds really weird, but you know, those kind of like movies where there's like operating table and that sort of thing. And you sort of, I don't know. I just thought like, oh, well, I'll go to sleep. I remember the anaesthetist saying to me, like, I need you to count back from, you probably won't even get to like 9 because you'll be asleep. And I was like, I'm going to nail this. And it was sort of like 10. And then that was it. You just sort of wake up. And it was the weirdest feeling because you have sort of people looking over you and beeps and whatevers. And I remember somebody saying to me that it's quite common that if you have the stoma bag on your right-hand side, that's temporary. And if you have the stoma bag on your left-hand side, then that's permanent. And I just remember sort of putting my hands down my tummy thinking, oh gosh, like, did everything go okay? Which side is it on? So I was, you know, lucky that it was on the right side. So going with the view, it was temporary, but yeah, it was scary. I did a night in intensive care, but the operation was successful. It removed all of the tumor. So my surgeon was really happy. Probably what I just hadn't prepared for was the mental side of having a stoma bag, and also just the recovery from major surgery. I got quite ill. I think I was only meant to be in hospital for, I want to say something like 6 days, but I ended up being in there for about 2 weeks because I got a really bad infection, which I just could, they weren't quite sure where it was coming from. And it was difficult to sort of just get rid of. And, you know, on top of that, you're just learning what a stoma is, how you change your bag, all those sort of bits that go with it, which was, it was a lot to take in, to be honest.
And after months of daily chemotherapy and radiotherapy with a new stoma, which comes with leaking and adaptation, you were sent home, but you weren't able to socialize because of the pandemic and having a lower immune system. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, I'm really lucky. I've got a really close-knit family and a great bunch of friends, and I just didn't really see them. And I guess I gave up my life in London. I moved in with mum and dad. I stopped work. It was very much just focusing on cancer. And that was tough. And I guess the way that kind of social media is, you can, you know, go on Instagram, you see sort of people doing nice things, and you're there at home in bed or on the sofa or in hospital. So I did find that tough. I was, you know, my friends were great. They would try and call me or send me cards or like little gifts. And that was amazing. I really, you know, really appreciated it. But it was a real challenge with COVID being an extra layer into something which is already really horrible.
How long did you have to spend in this period of isolation? And how long after did the doctors find more cancer cells?
Yeah, so when I got home, tried to sort of just get used to, well, just recover really, you know, just get used to a stoma bag, which, you know, took a while. just little things. Like I normally sleep on my front, like kind of diagonal starfish, and with a stoma bag, I just couldn't really do that. Or if I did do it, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and my bag had exploded. And, you know, it was all those kind of little things. The plan was to wait for the histology to come back, histology report to come back. And that came back saying that they found cancer cells in my blood vessels. So I had a meeting with my oncologist and he gave me the bad news. As I sort of said before, my view was, you tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. And the plan was to do 6 more months of chemotherapy. My main concern, or I guess sort of upset, was the fact that that meant I was going to have the stoma bag for all that time. I did ask, could I have an operation to remove the stoma where my body had healed and then go on to chemo? But understandably, it just doesn't work like that. So I said, let's just start chemo straight away. And that was a slightly different plan of attack. So it was 6 months, but it was 14 days straight of chemotherapy. Then you have 7 days off and then you repeat. So one round is 3 weeks long. And it was tough, to be honest. It was really difficult. Mentally, I felt really upset. I think, you know, I do suffer with anxiety and I was feeling very anxious about it. I suppose I just wasn't sure when this was going to end, when I was going to be able to kind of go back to some normality. I wasn't doing things like exercise because either I couldn't or I didn't have the energy for it. And so one thing with my stoma is that I was advised to kind of stick on stodgy food. So pizzas, pasta and potatoes, reduce or remove fiber from my diet. So I put quite a lot of weight on. So I just didn't feel like me. And then having to go back on chemo, it was tough. They tell you, you know, here's the list of side effects. 1 in 10 get this, 1 in 100 get this. And for me, I just felt like I was ticking all the side effects off week by week. So it was a really difficult 6 months, to be honest. COVID was still going on. So you have to be careful because obviously you don't want to get COVID during you're on chemo because it affects your immune system. I still had the stoma. So it was a very long 6 months, very long 6 months.
That must have been incredibly difficult. Thankfully, the treatment went well. What happened after that?
Yeah, I was so relieved. I had to have quite a lot of scans. Firstly, some sort of MRI where they put this kind of liquid, this tube and liquid up your bum, which sounds a bit weird, but they need to make sure that where the operation was, that it had healed correctly. So there wasn't going to be any leakage when I had the operation to remove my stoma. I was given the surgery date, it was confirmed that so there was no signs of cancer in me. And my scans all came back all good. And I was given the surgery date. And you had to isolate for, I can't remember now if it was 14 days or 7 days before, but I had to isolate for a little bit. And then sadly, somebody on my surgeon's team got COVID. So we had to cancel the operation and then wait another month. And to be honest, initially I was quite upset and I just said, is there anything we can do? Can we just, but I understand that, you know, everyone, there's a team and if one's down, you're all down kind of thing. So yeah, so when I had the operation to remove my stoma, I mentally wasn't prepared for the aftermath, perhaps as much as I thought I was, or even though the doctors and nurses had said a lot. Operation was successful. They removed the stoma bag. They piped me back up. Everything was great. And I started having kind of wet foods, things like jelly. And then they want you to sort of work up from that. Really, you need to go to the toilet normally. If you can go to the toilet normally, it's a thumbs up, and that's kind of the main step for you to go home. Sadly for me, for my tummy, it was kind of like the lights are on, but no one was at home. My stomach just wasn't working. And I got really ill and started sort of sicking up bile. It was just horrible. And although this can happen, I don't think it's sort of, it doesn't happen to everybody. So it was just sort of unlucky that happened to me. I was mainly meant to be in hospital for like six days or something like that. And it was a good couple of weeks, but it was pretty mentally draining, to be honest. I had to have put this tube down my nose, which would draw out the bile into a bag. I didn't eat or drink anything for 7 days. I was just living off sort of stuff they were putting through my arm. Basically, I needed to fart. That was it. And they needed to see some sort of sign that my stomach was trying to wake up and do its thing. But it almost got to a stage of, we're going to try this, this, and this. And if it doesn't work, we will have to look about having another operation and for you going back to a stoma bag. So it was really tough, mentally really difficult. I was very scared, but also I was towards kind of the end of it, on end of my time in hospital, where my tummy did start working okay. I hadn't appreciated actually how difficult it was to actually hold your poo or hold the kind of watery poo. That was kind of the next challenge, which I call potty training, really. When I was in hospital, I did poo myself in the middle of the night or couldn't get to the toilet quick enough. And that was just tough. I kind of thought, oh, it's fine. I'll get rid of the stoma bag and all is good. But that was the next really part of the journey. I would say I'm still not there yet, but I mean, you know, a year on from that surgery, I'm much better than what I was, but I almost thought maybe I'd done the wrong thing of having the operation, because I was probably going to the loo like 20 times a day. It was just horrendous. But now I'm much better. I go to the loo sort of like less than 5 times a day, I reckon. Life definitely feels a lot more normal than what it was, but it was a real challenge, real challenge.
Yeah, I assumed that you just really wanted the stoma removed and you thought that once it was, you could go back to feeling more like yourself when you hadn't been able to be like that in such a long time. And then obviously there were all these challenges you hadn't anticipated. So where are you now in terms of your cancer journey? Did you receive the all clear?
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, I think it's the thing I've probably realized, and I put this some element of like frustration there, which when people say, oh, you're cancer-free, you think, you mentally think that means that person's back to normal. But actually, I don't think people appreciate the cancer-free next step of the journey. And that for me has taken quite a long period of time. So I have to have scans every 6 months. My scans that were in January of this year all came back good. And I've got, I was meant to have scans, but they've got rearranged annoyingly. So I'm going to have them sort of in about 4 weeks' time. I've had a few. I've been in remission for just over 12 months. There have been a few scares along the way, random things appearing on my lungs, but ends up being nothing. And as I say, kind of the potty training is a onward journey. But my niece is potty training as well at the moment. So I'm telling her we're doing it together. We're both like running for the toilet at the same time. But I'm trying to get back to kind of some form of normality, really. I've started doing exercise again, which has just been amazing. I've lost about 2.5 stone. So I'm definitely feeling a lot like myself. I can fit in my old clothes again. I've gone back to work. Initially, it was part-time and I kind of worked my hours back up. But I'm very lucky. I can live a fairly normal life. I think, you know, probably my main challenge is that I just get tired. I get so tired. Kind of the thought of like going out on a Friday night for some beers is just sort of feels like a thing of the past now. It's usually sort of like I go to bed at 9, but that's cool. You know, like I've definitely adapted. And I think probably having really not been well, I've realized kind of what I want in life and what's important in life. And I'm keen to just really try and raise awareness sort of within cancer, that cancer doesn't discriminate and it affects anybody at any age. You know, we all go to the loo and it's just so important to check your poo, because, you know, I just sort of feel like if I didn't go to the GP when I did, my cancer journey would have been completely different.
And do you think it helped, as your dad had bowel cancer before, for you to be more aware of the symptoms? Did you find that your parents, given both of their previous diagnoses, to be a real support, especially as your dad had been through similar treatment?
Yeah, you know, I say, because London is home, but when I got diagnosed, I moved out of my apartment and moved back to Kent with mum and dad. They have obviously had their own journeys with cancer, but their lives literally got put on hold whilst I was ill. Dad would drive me to hospital every day for my radiotherapy. Mum would come to all the consultations with the doctors and the nurses. And, you know, especially when they had a stoma bag, what I could and couldn't eat was challenging. So, you know, Mum was trying to do her best on that. And yeah, like it still makes me emotional now, sort of thinking about it and talking about it, because, you know, they've done so much for me. And I just think it must be having had cancer, I know that must be a real difficult thing to go through, but to see one of your children go through it, it must be just a real horrible thing to feel. So, you know, I just really appreciate everything that they've done for me.
Thank you. You mentioned before that you're keen to share the message that cancer doesn't discriminate, but you also want to spread the word of the symptoms. When you wrote your piece with us, you did such a brilliant job of that, especially smashing the stigma surrounding talking about poo. After your article was published, did you notice people reaching out saying they were going to get their symptoms checked, or that they now had a better understanding of the condition?
Yeah, so I couldn't believe actually how sort of far-reaching the article went. I guess like it's the kind of the power of like social media, but I wasn't really expecting people to send me messages sort of primarily on Instagram saying, thanks for this, or, you know, hope you're doing okay. And I've actually just been diagnosed, and how are you finding with your stoma bag? So, you know, I knew when people say the cancer community, I understood that, but actually until you get diagnosed, you don't really understand what that means. And yeah, the article has just been amazing. I feel, you know, being able to write something like that and know that I'm helping others makes it totally worthwhile. You know, my life has got turned upside down and it won't ever be the same again. And if I can help anybody get an early diagnosis is like really important for me.
And you'll be doing that with this podcast, Nick. Thank you so, so much for speaking to us and being so open. We really appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to discuss, or do you want to tell listeners which symptoms to look out for and when and why they should see a doctor as soon as possible if they have them?
I think that just as like a wider topic, I think just if something doesn't look or feel right, go and see your GP. I think for men especially, we're just not very good at sharing our feelings. And I think we're very good at just burying our head in the sand and not worrying about it. So yeah, really anything that doesn't look or feel right, go and see your GP, because they are there to help and they want to help. I do often look back and think, did I have other symptoms earlier that could have told me sooner that I wasn't very well? And, you know, I definitely felt tired, and that definitely was a symptom. I'm not saying if you feel tired, that means you have cancer, but it's just so important to, you know, booking to see your GP if something doesn't look or feel right.
Thanks for listening to my platform and to Nick's experience. Please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps people to find the podcast. Our main aim with this podcast is to give a platform to underheard voices, offering human first stories. We'd love to hear if Nick's story helped shape your worldview. If so, please let us know on Twitter at Metro Opinion or by email at platform@metro.co.uk. My platform is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. I'm Jess Austin. Thanks for listening.